6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here for the second of our positional reviews shows, and this week we have Jim Zipko joining us to talk about the running backs. Jim, how you doing?
I'm great, Ken. How are you doing?
I've got no real complaints other than the Ravens are not playing today, and we're watching other teams do it, even if the Giants are getting destroyed by the Eagles and the Chiefs took care of the Jags at home, and that could have been the Ravens, obviously.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you first. Where can folks talk football with you online?
Well, on Twitter all the time, I'm at @Zip_Jim. And I also have, during the season, I've had a weekly column appearing on RSR to discuss the pass catchers. Probably not very much to discuss along those lines in the offseason, but I actually expect to put up a piece about punters and punting data in the next week or two. So maybe that will be of interest.
Well, that sounds like fun. We could have a pod on that if you wanted to. Need to thank our sponsor, Liquid Death, the water that will brutally murder your thirst. Please give their product a try. They've been good to us, and we would recommend the lime seltzer. Getting back to the running backs for a moment, injuries dominated the dialogue during camp. Of course, Dobbins injured before the 2021 season, Edwards as well during the year. And during the year, that's right, isn't it? Yeah. And Edwards stayed on PUP. Dobbins really wanted to come back, thought he was ready to come back, came back as early as week three, although he was on the roster to start week one. He came off PUP, which might have been ill-advised, as it turned out. That, of course, took a roster spot, but he tried to play in four games early on, was not very effective, went back under the scope and came back and was very effective, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And, of course, the big other player that the Ravens had high hopes for was Tyler Beatty, who they drafted in the sixth round.
I don't understand. I found him to be a promising player, and I was actually surprised that he didn't stay with the team coming out of camp.
I think if they had it to do again, I'm not sure if they do it differently, but they could have gotten a look at Beatty instead of getting a look at, say, Mike Davis, because that made no sense at all.
Mike Davis was useless. Yeah. Yeah. He provided nothing.
And the Ravens have been down this road before, of course, with Devonta Freeman, Le'Veon Bell, and Murray last year. Latavius Murray. Yeah, and this year again, Kenya Drake actually was not terrible. He helped the team a little bit in terms of what he did. Mike Davis did not, and that was kind of unfortunate. Ended up playing only 42 snaps after the week one start for the Ravens, which is a little surprising. I may have that wrong. That might have been pass snaps or rush snaps or something like that, but I have him as 42 snaps. I need to make sure that's correct. But anyway, Mike Davis, obviously a veteran they leaned on. I've got my own theories that it's they like the veterans because of the mesh point. Do you have any other reason why they might have liked Mike Davis?
He was touted as a receiving back, and with J.K. Hurt, perhaps they didn't feel that they had a guy out of the backfield that knew where to go, how to run routes and stuff like that.
All right, let's go with that. This is one of these things, very few snaps the whole year. In a way, it was the season that wouldn't end for him because he was on the roster, trickled in, unbelievably. He was still on the roster in week 11 and active, played one snap that game. But his last six games, he played 1, 2, 5, 5, 3, and 1 snaps.
I think that if Dobbins or Gus could have been definitively healthy, Gus had even concussion issues late in the season. I think they would have loved to have cut loose of Mike Davis, but like just when they were about to, like Dobbins goes back under the knife or Gus maybe has some questions about his availability. So I think they couldn't quite let go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. They didn't quite let go. I mean, they still had Tyler Beatty on the practice squad most of the year. Denver finally took him in the final couple of weeks of the year, elevated him to the roster. He was inactive the first week, and then he rushed once for 0 yards. So we're not claiming Tyler Beatty was a star or anything. It just would have been nice to see what they had with Tyler Beatty since they invested a draft pick in him.
Yeah, and I also think that the having to hold on to, what are we up to, 5 running backs now? So we got Gus, we got J.K., we got Mike Davis, who we're talking about, we got Justice Hill and Kenyon Drake. I think that they wouldn't have wanted to hold on to that many. That's a roster spot that maybe could have been somewhere else, used somewhere else.
Sure. I mean, I agree with that. When you're ready to get rid of Mike Davis, I mean, they had some weeks where they were really short running backs. Like they were with Hill and Drake, and that's pretty much it.
Right.
So there were times when they could have used Beatty as a third back. And I think early in the season would have made the most sense for that. Maybe make Drake the number one, Beatty the number two. There is some overlap perhaps in what Beatty and Hill bring to the team. And mm-hmm. I think Justice Hill kind of had a pretty decent year. He contributed in some significant ways for the Ravens, certainly on special teams, but on offense as well, in terms of being on for a lot of passing downs, being a generally reasonably reliable pass blocker, and an occasionally explosive runner.
I actually think even more highly of Justice Hill than that, and I wish they had given a bunch of Kenyon Drake's carries to Justice Hill.
We'll talk about 2023 later, but he's one of the real big questions as to what do they do with him. But I definitely agree with you in the sense that I think they kind of underutilized Hill a little bit this year. He, when the team is desperate without any kind of an outside speed threat, he was the obvious guy who brought that along with what Duvernay could do with jet motion. But sometimes you want to have a two-way speed threat and give Lamar Jackson even more advantages in the middle of the field that he might be able to take advantage of. And they just didn't have that for very much of the season, or at least not they didn't have it on a regular basis because they really did not trust Hill that much, it looks like.
It's peculiar because so I the baseball statistic OPS on base plus slugging. So I played around last maybe month of the season with a running back version of that, which I'm calling YTS, yards times success, which is the yards per carry average times the success rate, the typical football outsider success rate, 40% on first down, 60% on second down, 100% on third and fourth down. And you get some interesting results that seem kind of plausible when you rank backs by that. And Justice Hill on the season, I got 5.35 yards per carry and a 59% success rate, which is very good for a running back. I think that he was very reliable and productive. I think he took a real step in terms of maturity. I think as a younger back, we saw him maybe a little reckless, maybe outrunning his blocking sometimes, and sometimes not settling for the hole that was there, and thus taking a loss because he tried to bounce at some place where there wasn't anything. I think we saw a much more disciplined and mature back in Justice Hill this year, who was actually quite good with the little utilization that he got.
You know, I'm thinking about your stat here, and I think I really like it. And normally, when I hear a new stat, there's something wrong with it, or at least there's a caveat that has to go with it or whatever. But right. OPS is highly flawed. It adds together two things that are not the same. I mean, why not add fielding percentage and batting average?
At least it's both things that have to do with plate appearances. It's not like fielding and, you know, strikeouts or anything.
Loosely related to plate appearances in the case of slugging. But the thing that's important on offense is outs used. And that's what
in baseball
they fail to like mold those things. I tell you, when that was done in the late 80s and early 90s by Stats Inc., I was pissed. I was scoring games in the press box. I was in contact with them. I was very upset about the advancement of this thing. It's like, you guys got to know better than this. I know you want one number, but you've got to know better. And they do it. Now they have a weighted OBA, and you know if you weight it, you really use about two times the on base percentage and one times the slugging, which is something they could have done in the past if they'd have approximated the relative value of it. But you know, it's been 40 years of home run hitters justifying their existence over this ridiculous statistic that is not very good. Anyway,
woo! No! Let's open the stats rabbit hole. We're talking to the right guy here. So. On base percentage and slugging percentage, the use of them together, to the best of my knowledge, goes back to Bill James' run created formula, but he multiplied them and then multiplied them additionally, the product of them, and either at bats or plate appearances, I forget which. And that was his rough approximation of his runs created formula. And then the more formal formula had, you know, caught stealing, you know, a bunch of other things.
Sure.
But his simple, you know, get you within about 10 or 15% of runs created was OBA times slugging times either plate appearances or at-bats. I forget which.
Okay, that's a factored approach. I how soon did he get to runs created? It was runs created per 27 outs used has been the most common current thing. Mm-hmm. And outs used in the denominator is really the important advancement. If you have that, then you can use offshoots of isolated power, slugging, whatever you want to do, and use that in the same formula with OPS. But you need outs used in there somehow. Mm-hmm. Let me bring this back to the running back situation here, because what I'm saying is I really like your formula, I think, because it multiplies two things. I'm not sure they should be multiplied together, but it's not a bad thing. So you have, mm-hmm. you have your total yards per carry, which is one important metric, and you're multiplying that by a success rate. So I'm trying to understand, trying to think to myself, which is the more important of those two, the success rate of the yards per carry. And it well could be that success rate tells you more, and that's, you know, three times the information, and then you're multiplying two things that are of not equal weighting. But on the surface, I like it. It's a great new attempt to do something different. And is anybody else doing this? Did you steal this idea from somebody, or did you come up with it yourself?
I believe I guess I came up with it myself, but I don't want to take any innovation credit from it, because, you know, success rate comes from Aaron Schatz at Football Outsiders.
Sure.
OPS comes from, I'm going to say, Bill James. I'm not going to credit Stats. You know, they bastardized the original multiplication approach. You know, so it's stealing a couple of ideas and from two disparate sources and putting them together.
Sure. Okay, OPS is just, I mean, on base and slugging, what Bill James did that was very good was he popularized the use of those two things as being the two most important offensive statistics. They are, but you shouldn't add them together because they're not equally important. They're different amounts of important.
Which is more important? Is it OBA is more important?
Oh yeah, by a factor of two.
Yeah. Okay.
Roughly. Yeah. So you want
to. So
it's because the reason is because it's more closely related to outs used. That's mm-hmm. the reason. Outs used is the scarce resource.
Yeah.
Earl Weaver, remember, the most valuable asset team has is 27 outs.
Right. He didn't want to spend any of them by stealing a base. Right. By bunting. Right. Yeah. Well, so if you want to go down this hole just a tiny little bit, the the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 running backs for the, well, let me discuss the stat very briefly. Success rate, you know, if you, it in a sense dominates because, you know, if you don't have any successful runs, then, you know, you get a zero no matter how high your runs per carry is. So you can have a 9 yards per carry average, but if you're gaining 9 yards on 3rd and 10 every time, that's not a successful down. So you actually get a zero in this stat. I think of it kind of your yards per carry, what percent of your yards per carry does a success rate allow you to keep? That's kind of the way I intuitively think of it. So among running backs, now obviously Lamar led the team in this stat. But among running backs, you first had J.K. Dobbins, who had a 58% success rate, 5.65 yards per carry for a, I mean, I don't want to read off a bunch of numbers. If you want to put it on your website, I'd be happy to send you my my spreadsheet.
Sure. Or we could maybe have a separate show on it. I think it's a really interesting topic, but I want to go down the rabbit hole further with you when we do it. So that it does sound like a good one. It almost sounds like there should be a third factor for volume there. Like carries.
Yes, right. So that's the problem. You absolutely have to have a minimum carry stat because if somebody can just, you know, run once for 10 yards and gain a first down, and he's going to lead the team in that stat. So you do have to do some kind of filtering there. And when I looked at Football Outsiders, when I multiplied this stat times rushing attempts, I got a number that was very similar to their effective yards number that they have on their running back stats page with like yards. An 85... Yeah, they have something called effective yards, which has to do with their DR calculation, and I'm not sure. But I was like 85% or so, or I don't know if it's a percent or what, though. But I had like a correlation of like 0.85 or 0.89 with that.
You got a lot of extra time at work, obviously. But
I'm on shift work now. I get a couple days off during the week, right after the statistics come out for the game weekends.
There you go. I'm sorry, I'm making fun of you, and it's not fair. But that seriously is some outstanding thinking on that. I'd love to really dig into that with you. It's effective yards and not DR. There's a different one. I mean, DR I've looked at a fair amount.
If you pull up their stats page for running backs, one of the columns way over to the right is effective yards.
Okay.
And there's probably some attempt, you know, it needs to be divided by attempts or whatever to get at their, maybe at their DR or something. I don't know.
Okay. And it's not like giving them a partial credit for the yards over 10, the yards between 4 and 10, the yards between 0 and 4, et cetera.
It may, in fact, be doing that. I'm sorry. That's more than I know about what they're doing.
All right. I know that's ALR, adjusted line yards, I think, works off something like that. All right. Let's get back.
So could we just list the running backs then in the order of this stat?
Sure.
Okay, so number one was JK, 5.65 yards per and a 58% success rate, which gives them a YTS of 3.26. Justice Hill, 5.35 yards per carry, 59% success rate for a YTS of 3.16. And then Gus, 5.08 yards per, 60% success rate for a YTS of 3.05. And then in this stat, around 2 is kind of the break point for average. That would be like a 4.5 yards per carry and a 45% success rate gives you like 1.98 or something like that. So about 2 is an average performance, average-ish. So anything above that score is good. Kenyon Drake was at a 1.98 with his 4.44 yards per carry, 44.5% success rate. Patrick Ricard, 2.29 yards per carry, but 71% success. He's converting a lot of and shorts, right?
Yep,
and ones and twos. Yeah. So that gives him a number of 1.63. And then our boy Mike Davis, 2.25 yards per carry and 37.5% success rate for 0.84 and a truly terrible rushing performance on the season.
Yep. That was, it certainly was that. I will tell you we'll go down this real quickly with the Football Outsiders guys. The Ravens only had one guy who made their minimum 100 yards rushing category, and that was Kenyon.
100 rush attempts.
You want 100 rushing attempts? Yes, correct. He is 109 for 482, but he's 40th in effective yards, 37th in success rate, and this is of 42 guys, of 42 guys. Who had 100 carries. He was 37th in success rate
He's an interesting player in that he's a high volatility player. If he can get through, like if he can get 2 yards without being touched, then he'll get you 10. But I don't know what his problem is. If he has no contact balance or if he can't change direction or whatever, he got stuck behind the line of scrimmage, either stuffed at or behind the line of scrimmage on fully a quarter of his runs this year.
That is terrible. And Drake, the way I put it is that he did very well on well-blocked runs. When he got into level three, he had the long speed to finish runs, while J.K. Dobbins did a great job of getting to level three but couldn't finish runs.
Early.
Even late. I mean, it looked like he had a piano on his back. He's leaving tons of yards on the field for most. I've used that line so many times now. It's like an automatic. So, and there's somebody had a meme out there of me and say, and it's everybody looking at Bart Simpson saying, say the line, say the line. Inside linebacker could be platoon.
I hate to pile on Kenyon Drake because I've interacted with him a little bit on Twitter and he seems an extremely thoughtful, composed guy who, you know, has a good head on his shoulders, but he was not, I cringed almost every time he ran just because I was, you know, and then he busts a 30 yard one. And you're like, oh, what a great play. You know, and he had one tremendous game for the Ravens.
No, yep. The Giants, right? Giants.
Yeah. But I found Justice Hill to be much more reliable on, I guess, 49 runs this year, over 5 yards per carry, almost 60% success rate. I don't get his usage pattern. And it almost feels like their evaluation of Hill was stuck in a prior year, a prior edition of the player that Hill is or was.
Yeah,
you mentioned jet sweeps. And one thing that annoyed me was when they elevated Andy Isabella to run the jet sweeps. I mean, Justice Hill, what did he run, a 4.4, 4.35 or something like that in the 40 way back when? Why wasn't he the jet sweeps guy?
Well, I think, for one thing, I think Isabella was even faster. I just don't think he was that terrifying to opposing defenses. I think Hill might still give you more, being the power and maybe the cutting and the elusiveness and some of those things. I think he might give you more, but I agree. And I one of the things the Ravens could have done is put Pony on the field and put two running backs on and that's okay. Andy Isabella doesn't really give you anything as a receiver. At least I don't think so. So anyway,
it's hard to see where on the field Andy Isabella gives you anything.
There you go. I mean, they had him, I think, as a backup return guy in part. So let's kind of take our way through this chronologically, because it's easy to forget what happened to the 2022 Ravens at the running back position. But Tyler Beatty was added as a screen guy, you know, a guy that seemed to be a very good match with the Linderbaum pick in terms of being a guy who could, you know, potentially run screen pops, had some power, some elusiveness, low center of gravity. Could give you various things in the run. In the pass game that would, you know, maybe make a difference from where things were. Actually, I think we saw more from Hill in that regard. I mean, obviously we saw more from Hill than we did from Beatty, but we saw more above expectation than we did from Hill on some of those plays than from obviously the Beatty.
Do you have data on how many screens they ran this year and who they ran them to? I know that it felt anecdotally that we use screens more this year and more effectively this year than we had in prior seasons.
I'm going to see while we're going here if I can come up with an important yak amount to see relative to total yards. But that's all I would have. Okay. Let's go. But while we're talking about this, J.K. Dobbins, obviously he kind of demanded his way back onto the practice field during camp. Should not have been there. Had to go back to IR after 4 games, you know, not playing well. And, you know, those first pre-scope games, J.K. Dobbins had 123 carries on 35 yards, 3.5 yards per carry. When he came back, he's one of the best backs in the NFL, 385 yards on 57 carries, 6.8 yards per carry. And then another 4.8 yards per carry in the wild card game where he's complaining about not getting the ball enough. And what I'll say about that 6.8 yards per carry to close out the 4 regular season games that he played at the end, he did that while leaving an unbelievable number of long yards on the table. He just he could not finish a run to save his life.
He was angry about it too. You could see his frustration.
Oh yeah,
and he was lighting up the lead over six yards per carry, and he's frustrated that he's not doing better. Yeah, he's a very exciting player when he's healthy.
Yeah. He's very, very open about it, which is good because he realized that even then something was wrong. He's saying, you know, next year I'm going to be fine. The long speed is going to be back and whatnot. And that's good. You know, if it ends up, he ends up being a Ray Rice type back, which he is not so far in his career, despite great yards per carry in the first two seasons. He hasn't been the
receiver. You're talking about his usage in the passing game.
Yeah. He hasn't been the receiver that Rice was. And Rice had a very enviable position. If you want to be a check down running back on any team, the Baltimore Ravens is a great place to be a check down running back. Yeah. Just an incredible place. Cause that was Flacco's second read. So it's pretty much it.
You mentioned Ray Rice. So in Matt Waldman's evaluation of Dobbins coming out of college, Waldman had Dobbins as Ray Rice with a splash of LaDainian Tomlinson. And the splash was Dobbins' ability to reaccelerate after changing speed, you know, slowing down to make a cut or make a guy miss or whatever, his ability to reaccelerate. And you can kind of see it when he, after injury.
It's a very sad situation. The Ravens have gotten 1.5 great years out of J.K. Dobbins out of the first three. Yeah. And really 1.25, honestly, if you really want to get down to it, that's what it is. And they're going to go into 2023. It's going to be his last year with the Ravens. Mm-hmm. I don't see them signing him long term. I don't think that he fits the plans. If you got Lamar Jackson, you're probably not going to pay a running back because you're going to have to start making decisions about where you don't spend money. And that's going to be
shame.
Pretty much everywhere.
I think that he and I think that some of that explains his. I mean, Dobbins is the way he pressured the team and to get him back on the field, I think may have been contract related, you know, like, can I earn the extension now, you know, without going into the final season of my deal?
I mean, the Ravens would have to extend him then,
right?
Which within the Lamar world we live in, I don't know if that seemed reasonable or not, but it was more reasonable before they acquired Roquan. Obviously, but
yeah.
They signed Roquan. Even.
Yeah, and whether it's reasonable or not doesn't really factor into whether it was in Dobbins' mind.
You may see your coworkers cracking open a can in your 9 a.m. stand-up meeting, but it's most likely not beer. It's a New Mountain spring water called Liquid Death. You've heard me talk about this many times. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it'll brutally murder your thirst. Plus, its infinitely recyclable Tallboy cans are helping to bring a death to plastic bottles. Did you know plastic's not even really recyclable anymore? It ends up just going to a landfill because it's not profitable to recycle. Meanwhile, aluminum is recyclable and profitable for recycling facilities. You guys know how much I love Liquid Death. It's in everything I do. I take it to work. I take it to the ball club. I take it when I'm out with the kids. I got them right here on my desk because I'm recording a podcast. I'm always with it. What's cool now is I'm seeing you guys on Twitter talk about how you're grabbing your cans and going to work. So send me those stories about what you're doing and how you're cracking open a tall boy in odd situations because, hey, it's water. And not only is it water, it's the best water that you can go out there and buy. It's cold. You can drink it with whatever you're doing. So go on out there, get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven, or find a Liquid Death retailer near you with their store locator tool by going to liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
whether it should
listeners,
have been
I wish you could see Ken's face.
I'm trying to find a way to agree with that statement as it is. You're right. Dobbins might not have been realistic about his own ability to get a contract. That's certainly true. But that's cool.
I mean, this is his earning power, right? We're talking about like he's only got a couple more earnings value years because of his playing a devalued position. So I can understand a feeling of urgency on his part to make, you know, to make something count out of each one of them.
Well, sure. And that's certainly true. And you don't want to become a running back who's missed a lot of his first four seasons and then is a guy. And he already has missed one complete season. He tried to get back on the field. You could call this half a season, but if you call it half a season, it's not nearly as good as the quarter season was. and the you know it would just be nice if I would just like him to have a really big year four. And I can, you can see why he was so upset. And he's been vocally upset at two times with the Ravens. Number one was not getting carries in this game. And there's probably others too, by the way, but the two times we've heard about it. And the other was about getting injured in the preseason in 21.
Yeah.
That he was really pissed about being on the field at all. At that point, which is unlike Dobbins in a way that, you know, it seems like a guy.
Was he pissed? He was pissed about being active for that game.
Yeah. About being used in the preseason. Yes. I think it wasn't even the last game, right? It was the second game he got hurt in.
Was it the Redskins?
I think so.
Yeah.
Second game in 21. So they played the last game against the Redskins this year, right? Yeah.
That's twice that one of my favorite offensive performers has been lost for the season playing the goddamn Redskins. My before Miles Boykin, my favorite lost cause receiver for the Ravens was Marcus Smith. Way back when, and he tore up his knee covering a punt against the Redskins and was lost for his critical second year.
You must have been absolutely thrilled when that 2008 game, when he finally got his big play with the Ravens, the pass interference drawn in the end zone that set up their second touchdown.
Yeah, one of the most productive no reception seasons for a wide receiver ever.
That probably is. That definitely is. It's right up there. All right. We went through most of the guys here. So let's talk about 2023 for a second.
Can we talk? Yeah. All right. Let's talk because that actually I was going to say, can we talk about Gus? But I want to talk about Gus in the context of 2023. So, yeah,
we should probably talk about Gus's 2022 because he obviously did not come back until week 7. But once he came back and pretty much immediately upon coming back, was back to his old self. And one thing you can say about Gus Edwards is he's been one of the most consistent running backs in the history of the National Football League, just absurdly consistent. His yards per attempt, and by the way, it's easier to be consistent at 3.5 yards a carry than it is at 5.2 yards per carry,
right?
Which is his career average. And he's 5.2, 5.3, 5.0, 5.0 his four seasons. And his first three seasons were basically indistinguishable. 718 yards, 711 yards, and 723 yards. I doubt there's been a player in the history of the league whoever had three seasons that close at anything maybe over 200 yards. You know,
his career to me is a missed opportunity because he is so much better than you had any right to expect him to be. And he really, you know, if he had wound up on the Houston Texans under, you know, Gary Kubiak coaching that offense or whatever, I see him as the next Arian Foster, just, you know, consistent like 1,200 or 1,300 yard seasons. He was a guy who always, you can talk about finishing a run. He's a guy who always got a yard and a half or so more than you thought he was going to get out of every run. He always fell forward. His success rates have always been ridiculous. Just an incredible under the radar running back and so much better than you. I thought that when he, in 2018, when he joined the team, I saw him in camp. I'm like, what? Not in camp, in preseason. I was really unimpressed. And I was like, what is with this slow, untalented running back? Why are the Ravens wasting their time with him? And he has been great.
Yeah, absolutely. I did want to give those Justice Hill numbers, by the way, for receiving and then yards after the catch. But he had, let's see, 4.8. yards per I don't want that. I think I want yards per reception in this case. So he had 4.8 yards per reception, I believe. It's 58 yards on 12 receptions. He caught all 12 of his balls. That's why it's the same number.
Right. I'm
obviously throwing me off the but 4.8 yards per reception, but his yak per reception was 6.9. So his average ball
thrown at behind the line of scrimmage,
2.1 yards behind the line of scrimmage. That's very extreme, by the way. Ray Rice once had over 700 yards receiving, and he had a minus, a negative ADOT. But this this is very very extreme. So anyway, he's been a guy who certainly has picked up some significant yards after the catch on a regular basis.
You said that Gus Edwards picked up right where he left off, and I want to say that to my eye, just strictly fan impression, Gus looked to me like he had lost, I want to say, like a quarter step, like just a little bit off what he has had before.
I think that's fair. I you know, he He's not much different stat-wise, but it's within the context of a team that generally ran the ball very effectively. Now, one of the things about Edwards that made him a little less effective this year was he didn't play with Lamar Jackson as much. So Jackson, he was back at the end of the year. Jackson was gone at the end of the year, of course. And that was that was unfortunate for him. I think he would have been one of the guys who would have really benefited from more time on the field with Jackson. He picked up some huge first downs for the Ravens, including putting away that Steelers game with a big, what was a 3rd-and-4 run where he ran for 6 yards. Great schemed up run. Yeah. He chugged right over people and got the first down.
So he got the carry on 2nd down on the goal line against the Bengals in the wild card game. So the 3rd down was the Tyler Huntley fumble, and mm-hmm. it went the other way. But the 2nd down play was, I think, a loss of 1 by Gus in a situation where they really couldn't afford to lose one.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing is Gus had very few carries. I wonder if I have a times lost or stuff behind the line of scrimmage here within the PFR stats. I don't seem to have it. Like a TFL is what I'm looking for. But he was not tackled for a loss very often in his entire career with the Ravens.
Right.
It's definitely one of the hallmarks, along with the yards after contact, which were consistently outstanding.
More times this season, though, than in prior seasons, I think, behind the line.
Okay.
But Lamar's absence or not being teamed with Lamar can obviously have a huge impact on that.
Yep. All right.
So he's 27 years old this year.
Yep, he'll be 28. Wow, I did not know that. Born in Liberia? Did you know this?
I didn't know that.
All right, interesting. Okay, very good. Anyway, he will be 28 next year and scheduled to make $4.4 million. And it's interesting. I think there is – I mean, he's one of their better backs. But on the other hand, I think there's probably a pretty good chance that they're going to have to clear that cap space. Not impossible, I guess they would renegotiate his deal, over 3 years and he'd take a pay cut or he'd cut and be re-signed. Any number of things are possible. He will have some suitors, but they won't be big time suitors. I don't think there's a team out there that's looking to sign him for 3 years, $20 million or anything.
No.
The question would be whether he could get from the Ravens, say, 3 years, $7 million, that kind of number. But still has some earning power, I think, in the league.
I'm so torn between head and heart on this. He's been, I think, one of the most reliable players on the team the last 3 seasons. He's a guy that you trust utterly. He's been tremendous. That would be the heart part of it. Love to see him back. The head part of it is, 28-year-old running back who already has shown a little bit of evidence of maybe losing a tiny bit of speed. Already an undrafted free agent, so it's not like he was brimming with extra speed when he got into the league. To me, my head tells me that he's a threshold guy about to fall below the threshold of where he keeps his usefulness. And at that contract number, at that age for a running back, I hate to say it, but he would be, my nerd calculus is that he should be a cut, that he should not return.
Well, I would basically agree with you in that if you're projecting his career in any reasonable model, the only thing he's got on his side is very limited tread wear. He's only carried the ball 500 times, 501, I think, in his entire career. So that's not too bad. But then on the other side, he has been hurt already. He certainly may not have exactly the same speed he does. And the other thing you'd really point to is that he's always been productive to date on a per carry basis. Seems to fit well with this team and this offensive line in particular in terms of, and this quarterback is really what that means to do well. But I would agree with you. I mean, I think the Ravens have in recent years, they've had a lot of success with stylistic fit players and no success at all with veteran running backs. And they probably need to learn from that lesson. And unfortunately, I think Edwards is probably going to be a cap casualty because of that. And just because they need the money. I mean, it's $4.4 million and the guy they can find after Edwards is probably going to be 80% of the player at 20% of the price, pretty damn close.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you go into the season with J.K. Dobbins and Justice Hill as your first two backs, and then some, 6th round draft pick or undrafted free agent as the number three, and some veteran on the practice squad, that seems to me like the most probable or the most fiscally explainable.
Responsible.
Approach. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I still think Edwards could be back. I just think it has to be restructured. I don't know what they would exactly give him. Somebody else is going to want him, though. What I want to see the Ravens do is stay away from veteran running backs this year. First of all, they need to get younger at the position when Hill is the youngest guy they've got. Well, Hill and Dobbins are the youngest guys they have. Dobbins is entering year four. Hill, of course, is already a free agent, so they're going to have to pay him. Edwards is a free agent. They need to find their guys, either one guy late in the draft or a bunch of UDFAs coming in, or you know, the old tried and true way, which is check the scrap heap. Somebody else's garbage is going to be very useful to the Ravens on a stylistic basis because they run the ball more and they run the ball in more varied ways. And that may not be as true in a post-Greg Roman world.
But I was going to say, yeah, there's some assumptions embedded in that.
Yes, that's true. And it's the kind of thing that we're going to have to wait and see on some of that.
I kind of think, can we take a colossal leap and pretend for a moment that Frank Reich is the new offensive coordinator? And my reason for this is that Greg Roman was somewhere between aggressively and pathologically determined to platoon his backs. And so you had guys, you know, coming in, you know, J.K. Dobbins has never gotten, I think, more than 15 or maybe 18 carries in a game. Gus Edwards got some in a situation like that. Gus Edwards, as part of a Greg Roman stable of backs, had a lot of value. But then you look at Frank Reich, who is not the Ravens offense coordinator, but, you know, in my little fantasy, in this scenario, he is. He is used to a bell cow back. He had Marlon Mack in Indy, and then he had Jonathan Taylor in Indy. And it's easy to imagine J.K. Dobbins going for, you know, 1,300 yards in that kind of a scenario. But running back number two, Gus Edwards, not getting as much run and maybe not being as holding as much value as he would as a member of the rotational stable in a Greg Roman style of offense.
Yes. I mean, that's possible. I kind of think that rotating backs is something that may be an organizational thing. And the reason I would say it is we see it at other positions. We see it on the defensive line. This is a rotational team. They have been, it's DNA now, but it's been every defensive coordinator has been on the same bandwagon. They've hired a lot from within. And if you go all the way back to the beginning when they couldn't at times do it, in fact, this is a little known fact, but the 1996 Ravens shifted from a 4-3 to a 3-4 during the season, not by choice. They had injuries and they were forced to do it. And they had to change to a 3-4 defense because they just didn't have enough defensive linemen who could still stand. Their nose tackle, James Jones, who's really an outstanding player, really good pass rusher, could stunt a lot, really got worn out that year. And he played 90 or 91 snaps in the game against the Rams. One game, defensive lineman playing 91 snaps. Well,
that's
Marvin
insane.
Lewis, it's ridiculous. It's one of the highest totals ever by a defensive player for the Ravens. Only a few other games by Ray and Ed Reed, and basically Ray and safeties were in the same group. But
there's
anyway,
two things there, right? Because you have to play every snap and the defense has to be bad enough to stay on the field for that many snaps.
Yeah, it can often be a good team that stays on the field for a lot of snaps. Like the Tennessee Titans, the Ravens, I think, had 91, 92 plays against them in the wild card loss. Sorry, the divisional loss, right? The divisional loss. In 2019.
Why? Is that because I'm trying to imagine the mechanic there. Is that because Tennessee scored fast and then we were trying to catch up? Or why do you stay on the field that long?
We were trying to catch up, and there's a lot of shorter time plays when you're forced to pass the ball a lot. Lamar was running a lot and running out of bounds some. I mean, a combination of a variety of things. Obviously, running out of – okay, we don't have to go too deep down this rabbit hole, but that
I didn't realize we were talking about the 2019 game. I'm so so sorry to bring that to the attention of listeners. Let's pretend that didn't happen.
All right, no, that's fine. But that's the most plays the Ravens ever run in a game. They did have 530 yards in the game, but there's an awful lot of plays. Yeah. So anyway, my point was about the rotation. Is I think that you know,
but it's different to rotate at the defensive line, right? Like Jimmy Johnson, the ex Dallas and Dolphins head coach, there was one of his main keys to building a team was to rotate your defensive line and your pass rushers, so you always have a fresh front four.
Sure.
I mean, that's a stylistic. That's a specific positional strategy for that position. You think it applies all across?
Well, I'm saying I think it applies there. It applies at outside linebacker. It does not really apply at cornerback or at safety. It applies at the weak side linebacker spot to a degree. I mean, if you have a guy who can't play every snap, that's a perfect spot for him because he can rotate with a safety and a guy's in for the dime. And then you go to the offensive side of the ball. They don't really rotate offensive linemen ever.
Does anybody?
The Ravens have done it in the past. I'm not going to say they never do. When they have two guys at the position, they will occasionally, you know, allow them to alternate series or whatever. It's not like it's never happened, but it's not the preferred way. Offensive linemen continuity is so valued that they like to keep them on the field every down. Tight end, different story. The Ravens have been this goes for all skill position players. They've been a skill position rotation team where they've been all five positions. They're comfortable doing what the Saints did a few years back and changing all five of them. And the one guy who seems to stay on the field no matter what, or more often than you think, is Patrick Ricard.
Right.
And otherwise they make changes at running back, at tight end. One of Hurst
in 2019, that guy was Nick Boyle, who stayed on the field a whole lot.
Yeah, he did. He stayed on the field a whole lot. Andrews was a designated pass catcher, and Hurst had another designation, which he wasn't very happy with, which ended up, you know, getting him traded. But anyway, he obviously more of a run blocker. But even at the wide receiver positions, you know, Boykin was getting a higher percentage of the run snaps than the pass snaps. So you have, they're very comfortable rotating players at those positions. So,
I have a column about like Greg Roman's departure on RSR. And one of the things I mentioned was this rotation that we're talking about. And I had assumed, or at least wrote from the viewpoint, that that was a Greg Roman thing, constant shift. It's not. It goes back. Tell me. So can you tell us more about prior to Roman skill position rotation?
So they did have Jamal, and he got a high percentage of the carries, and they had always guys though with him who were not insignificant. Priest Holmes at first, at Chester Taylor, of course, played with him for several years. So they had guys. Bernard Pierce, right, with Rice, you're saying? Yep, that's a good one.
Yeah, I'm sorry, yep.
Yeah,
the three-headed monster in 2008.
Yeah, that's right. They were overloaded in terms of talent at the position there, and they had one of their tailbacks was really a fullback. So it was
Ray-Ron McClain, and what was it, Ray Rice and Willis McGahee?
Yep, those are the three. So, they've had the ability to when they've had extra backs, they've been happy with it. They've not tried to overuse any of them. And I think that's the way the NFL is headed. I think that they really don't want to run backs into the ground. I think running backs would be smart not to let themselves get run into the ground the way the position is being devalued.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah. Remember Warwick Dunn. He built himself an undersized back, played with Tampa for many, many years. He managed to build himself a very long career out of platoon situations and being a third down back.
How long did Warwick Dunn play in the league? Oh my God. Yeah. 12 years.
Yeah.
That is a long time for a guy like him. All right. 2023. So what are you projecting as the opening day starting situation with backs? Dobbins?
J.K. Dobbins, number one, Justice Hill off the bench, Gus Edwards off the roster, Mike Davis never heard from again, Patrick Ricard getting nowhere near the snaps that he got for Greg Roman, but still being used situationally as a fullback.
Okay, and we'll include Ricard in with the tight ends. That was the plan, but that's fine in terms of that. I think we'll see a significant UDFA or waiver claim. I think there'll be a guy who the Ravens specifically pick off the scrap heap of undrafted players or the scrap heap of another team when cuts occur. So they'll have.
I bet it'll be sooner. I bet it'll be an undrafted guy. I bet he'll come into training camp early as an undrafted free agent and stick like a Gus Edwards, not like an Alex Collins, who I guess was a scrap heap pickup after being cut by Seattle.
Yep. He's a good example of one. But even the way the Ravens have lost those guys in recent years with guys like Mizell and try to think of other guys. Beatty would be another one. But they've lost running backs in recent years. Who was the guy they lost last year, speedy back in 2021 that they lost?
I'm thinking of the wrong guy because I'm thinking of Smoke, but that he was a wide receiver, right?
Smoke Mizell. Yeah, that's so. I'm not talking about him. This is a running back who was fast and never really got on the field with the Ravens, and then they ended up losing him. And I'm missing the name. Folks out there, you'll correct me when this gets promoted or whatever. Just drop that name right in there. I'll be happy to hear it. Jim, always great talking football with you. Great to get to talk over this running back group and what's going on. And it's very cool to have a departure and talk about a few baseball statistics here. I guess I didn't really realize you were as much of a baseball guy as this.
I'm nowhere near as much of a baseball guy. I had a brief, intense baseball fixation from about 1988 to about whenever they traded away Mike Mussina. And I got really pissed at Angelos, and I got really pissed at the MLB ownership after that 90s strike, and I swore off that whole sport. So I'm a college basketball guy and a football guy, but I'm also a stats guy. So,
all right, well, fair enough. And also a reader of Bill James from way back, which is good. So he's the father of a lot of what's been done in sports analytics. Yep. And very cool. Want to tell folks one more time where they can find you online?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter. I'm at @Zip_Jim, or look for the likes on most of Ken's tweets, and you'll find me. And look for me also on the RSR collection of writers. I was doing a series of weekly columns about Ravens receivers this past season, and some of the writing I'm actually proud of. So, you know, you can look up some of it if you want.
All right. I'm doing a new podcast this offseason. It's called That One Play.
Oh my God, I got one for you.
Intended to be shorter content. Thank you, Jim. Definitely was going to try and solicit that from you either here or in the time after the show, but definitely. Idea is this. Pick one play in Ravens history. We'll talk about it for about 15 to 20 minutes. Intended to be very short content out there on a daily basis. So there's something there every day during the offseason. But so want to open the mic to as broad a group of people as I can. So come on, hit me up. 18 people already came to me with ideas. So we are killing it early on in terms of stuff to do. But these are the kind of things we record them very quickly. They're always interesting conversations. And what I'm looking for is people have a different perspective on the play. So an example I heard was an excellent one today, a guy who worked with the team photographer, and he's down at field level for some of the big plays in Ravens history. And he has his own story on those. I thought that was a neat one.
Oh,
he has to pick one play and then kind of describe it. And if you were at the game and you want to talk about how cold it was or why this guy was your favorite player and you brought his jersey immediately after he said play because that meant A and B and C to you, that's cool. If you want to talk about the history of the play, I'm always good with that, of course. And we can talk about how it changed the Ravens, how it changed the game, how it changed whatever you want to think about. But I'm looking for your own personal perspective. I'm looking for many different spins on this and a lot of different voices on the other end. So please hit me up with a DM on Twitter. They're always open, and I'd love to hear from you. Jim, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's always a thrill for me to be on.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.